symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Like most kids, I grew up loving sports. Unlike cartoons or comic books where there was good and evil, we learned that in sports we had winners and losers, and the very best became champions. Of course, professional wrestling combined both the athleticism and competition of sports with the classic stories of good and evil from comic books. And in professional wrestling, the champion doesn't get some dumb trophy or a silly ring. The champions in professional wrestling get the coolest prize of all, a championship belt. With a belt like that, what kid didn't want to be a champion? As a kid, even my action figures had championship belts. My first belt was a Styrofoam WWF World Championship. I had so much fun with that toy as a kid. But what about the real belts that we saw on TV back then? For something so revered, a title belt is seemingly lost to history after it stops appearing on television. What happened to those belts? Did they wind up in the trash like my old toy belt? Or did they wind up in a warehouse in Stamford? This is the story of those championship belts. This is Title Chase. The world championship was usually reserved for the main event, and that, of course, meant whoever wore that title belt was normally the biggest draw for the promotion. In the New York territory, that meant guys like Bruno Sammartino or Hulk Hogan. On September 1st, 1979, the WWF introduced the Intercontinental Championship, announcing that Pat Patterson had won a tournament in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, to become the first ever Intercontinental Champion. Of course, that tournament wasn't real. But what was real is Pat Patterson's reputation in the ring. He was a wrestler's wrestler. If you wanted great matches with incredible athletic performances that told stories, look no further than Pat Patterson. His brilliance influenced generations of wrestlers, including Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, The Rock, and so many others. Chris Jericho once referred to Pat as wrestling's Yoda, and Dave Meltzer even suggested that he was perhaps the second most influential person in professional wrestling over the last 40 years. Second only to Vince McMahon himself. Interestingly enough, the first Intercontinental Championship was actually the old North American Championship, just rebranded. It was a simple design with five trophy-style plates, Velcro in lieu of snaps, and get this, carpet backing. But that title is a story for another day. However, it's impossible to tell the story of the Intercontinental Championship without providing the context of what Pat Patterson meant to the title. While Bruno or Hogan's matches may have been box office successes, Pat Patterson's matches were a critical success. And as such, because Pat was the very first Intercontinental Champion, it earned the designation within the industry as being the Worker's Belt. Meaning whoever wore this title was in fact one of the best in-ring performers in the business. The lineage of this belt would see title reigns from the likes of Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon, the British Bulldog, Triple H, Chris Jericho, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, Owen Hart, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Some of the most famous matches in WWF history happened with the Intercontinental Championship on the line. Who could forget Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 91 from Madison Square Garden? The Intercontinental Championship was even in the main event for one of the biggest shows in history the following year at SummerSlam 92 from Wembley Stadium. The ladder match with Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon is still considered the gold standard of ladder matches and one of the most iconic WrestleMania moments in history. Plainly said, if you loved wrestling, you didn't want to miss a match with the Intercontinental Championship. Of course, the design of the Intercontinental Championship would change several times over the years. The initial design, the former North American Championship that Pat Patterson debuted in September of 79, was also later held by Pedro Morales, Don Morocco, and Ken Patera. The second design of the Intercontinental Championship was held by Tito Santana and Greg the Hammer Valentine. Tito won the Intercontinental Championship for a second time, and he was able to debut the third iteration in 1985. Which to this day is certainly the most iconic design for the title. As with every other belt we've discussed on Title Chase thus far, this belt was created by Reggie Parks. For as long as I've been collecting belts, the three most requested designs for fan collections have been the NWA's Big Gold Belt, the classic WWF Winged Eagle Championship that debuted in 1988, and the design we're covering today, Reggie Parks Intercontinental Championship. Once I started collecting, I learned that while it was very cool to own a Reggie Parks Intercontinental Championship, the most coveted design was his first version that debuted in 1985. For years, collectors refer to this as the Savage IC or the Red Letter IC. While Tito Santana was the first to wear this championship, whom he lost it to would become most synonymous with it, the Macho Man Randy Savage. The actual title belt we're discussing today is perhaps best known for the match where Randy Savage lost his title to Ricky the Dragon Steamboat at WrestleMania 3 in a match that Dave Meltzer gave 4.5 stars in his Wrestling Observer newsletter. For years, that match was regarded as being the very best WrestleMania match of all time. It wasn't until WrestleMania 10 with the iconic ladder match, which coincidentally was also for the Intercontinental Championship, that there was even a debate about the best WrestleMania match. By now you know that Reggie Parks would sketch the belt using Dover clip art books, cut them out, layer them, and photocopy them to create the look of the title. From there, a sheet of zinc would be cut into the proper shape. He would sand those down, dip them in copper, nickel, and 24 karat gold to make the plates. Reggie's Intercontinental design after this initial version of the belt were all 5 plates with a logo plate. However, this first Intercontinental design did not have a logo plate at all. As you'll see, there are 5 total plates, and the largest plate in the middle is known as the center plate, with the 2 on each side simply being known as the side plates. First, let's examine the center plate. The middle of the belt is, of course, the most important piece of any championship belt. It will most prominently be featured at all times, whether it were around the champion's waist, over their shoulder, or used in a match graphic. Here you see the dimensions of the center plate of this particular championship. The design features the classic block logo, WWF branding, at the center of the top of the main plate. This is one of the signatures of this particular belt. The WWF logo was raised on almost every other Intercontinental design Reggie ever made. Here on Reggie's first design, the logo was recessed and painted red. As far as we can tell, the recessed logo only appeared again in the mid-90s, where you would see it around the waist of champions like Razor Ramon, Diesel, Jeff Jarrett, and Marty Jannetty. But the recessed logo is rare for this design, and this was the only particular title where the logo was painted red. Notice how the block logo area is cut out from around the top, and then we see a slope that leads to a series of 3 stair steps, if you will, across the top of the belt. Flanking the block logo, you'll see a set of 3 flares to the left and right of the logo. These would have been clip art pieces that you could interpret to be leaves, ribbons, or perhaps even wings. But the designs served their purpose to fill the dead space at the top of the belt. Beneath those flares, you'll see the big banner that spans the entire center plate left to right. The banner reads Intercontinental with 3 stars on each side. Of course, the word and stars are gold that pops against a solid banner painted black. The main plate has a series of vertical lines that run from the top of the center plate to the bottom. These lines essentially create 5 separate areas, 2 smaller sections on each side, and a much larger section in the center of the plate. Below the banner, you'll see 2 sets of stars clustered together in sets of 6. Between the stars, you'll see the iconic globe that has become a staple on championship belts. You would see globes on the WWF tag titles and the world title during this era. Of course, globes like this also appeared on the NWA tag titles, the WCW television title, the Big Eagle, the 1991 WCW world title, and so many more. The globe on the Intercontinental Championship is perhaps more prominent than most other globes on belts. In my opinion, the magic of the Intercontinental design is in its simplicity. Reggie's design is the epitome of less is more. And as a result, the globe really pops. You'll see the latitude and longitude lines along with the land masses are all gold, while blue paint fills the background of the globe, representing the globe's oceans, of course. Below the globe, you'll see two more black banners, the first of which nearly touches the sides of the center plate, coming to a pair of points for the end of the ribbon. Inside this top banner are the words Heavyweight Wrestling, and of course, those letters are once again gold against black paint. The bottom banner is much smaller in size and simply reads Champion. A starburst design appears on either side of the bottom champion banner. The center plate itself has become a major talking point for collectors for years. One can't help but notice the wear and tear to not only the paint that's been chipped away or rubbed off, but the actual finish of the gold has become one of legend. For years, fans believed that Randy Savage, in an effort to make the belt look as good as possible, used Brasso to clean the belt.
Ooh, yeah!
Of course, Brasso is for brass, not gold plating.
I blame myself!
Where most Intercontinental titles shined up incredibly well, allowing the gold to pop, this title didn't exactly get much of a chance to do so. More on that in a moment. I also want to point out some impact damage to the top of the main plate, just to the left of the WWF logo at the corner of the first stair step. Before we move away from the center plate, I also want to point out that much like last month's episode on the WWF Tag Team Championship, Reggie Parks hid his initials in the design. Take a closer look at the bottom right corner of the Heavyweight Wrestling banner, and you'll see his initials, RP. The side plates on this exact belt are a little smaller than on that of Intercontinental titles that followed it. All four here are the same size, and here you see the dimensions of those side plates. The inner side plates show a grappler standing over another, almost as if he were going for a pinfall, while his opponent is pushing his left shoulder off of the mat. The outer side plates show a pair of grapplers in a collar and elbow tie-up. I found it interesting that there's a seemingly random series of lines on what I guess we would consider the ground beneath the grapplers. This wasn't common with Reggie's side plates, but was consistent for all of his Intercontinental designs. Besides the smaller size, the other thing that's unique about these side plates on this particular belt is the paint. Other Intercontinental championships didn't have black paint on the outside of the side plates, but it is a trademark of this particular belt. Of course, all four side plates feature the WWF logo at the top. That makes five times the WWF logo appears on the title. The red logo at the top of the center plate, and the logo in gold atop all four side plates. The spacing and tapering of the leather on this particular belt are also a little different from the Intercontinental titles that would follow. In fact, almost everything about the leather on this Reggie IC is different. For starters, the seashell tooling around the perimeter of this belt is not present. Keep in mind that this belt was debuted in 1985. During that time, the WWF was using a world title with laced edges, and the tag belts had different tooling as well. The United States Championship for the NWA that Magnum TA debuted in early 86 had similar tooling to this particular Intercontinental title, just a simple beveled edge. A straight line, if you will, all around the perimeter. As a reminder, all Intercontinental titles that Reggie designed after this first design featured his classic and signature seashell tooling. The snaps are the same as most other Reggie Parks belts, two rows of eight male snaps on the left side and two rows of five snaps on the right side. There's no gold tip on the right side. Reggie's stamp is present on the left side by the male snaps, but notice it's not his signature stamp you've seen before. This early Reggie stamp is very rarely ever seen. Also notice that there are no snap boxes where there was a beveled edge around the snaps on either side. The WCW United States, the WWF Tag Team, and most other iconic Reggie Parks designs had snap boxes, but on this title, Reggie would simply fade the embossing into the leather just before the rows of snaps begin. The leather backing is still intact on this particular belt, although rather oddly, there is a piece of duct tape present. No, we didn't put it there, and no, we have no idea who did or why they did. It was this way when we got it. The plates are attached to the leather with bolts that were either welded or silver soldered onto the back of the plates. The bolts are ground down and then covered with a thin piece of garment leather glued onto the back. This is commonly referred to as simply leather backing. Leather backing is typically 2 to 3 ounce thickness compared to 9 ounce thickness for the actual leather holding the plates. All these years later, it's easy to identify the location of the bolts as a few have started to poke through the leather backing. One of the most common questions about a ring used belt is always something like, how do you know for sure that this was the belt used on TV? The answer is what some would call the tell. The tell would simply be a signifying mark, scratch, imperfection, etc., that makes the belt unique to all others. Once you spot a tell, then you can trace it back through old footage, magazines, and promo photos. The tell for this particular championship is the divot in the leather to the left of the WWF logo at the top of the center plate. There are many pictures where this damage is present in old photos, but perhaps the easiest to identify is this photo of the Honky Tonk Man. Here are the dimensions of the leather strap. Once the leather design is finished and all of the tooling is done, it's time to dye the leather. Of course, the leather for this title was black. Here's the belt by the numbers. Of course, what gives any ring use championship its value are the matches and moments they represent. And this title has quite the history. On July 6, 1985, the WWF ran a house show in Baltimore, Maryland at the Baltimore Civic Center. Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper fought to a no contest, but they weren't the main event. That night, a steel cage match between Tito Santana and Greg Valentine took place, and it was one for the history books. On top of being a great match, Tito won and became the new Intercontinental Champion. But the heel Valentine, being a sore loser, began to destroy the championship belt. Tito finally got it back, but not before Gorilla Monsoon described it as falling apart. It was time for a new championship belt, but Tito continued to carry the old belt for several more weeks on TV. On July 9th, television tapings in Poughkeepsie would air for the next month. That night, Tito appeared on the Piper's Pit with the old title belt. The new belt made its debut at the September 9th TV tapings, coincidentally also in Poughkeepsie. On the episode of Championship Wrestling that aired on September 28, 1985, Tito Santana was scheduled in a six-man tag with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Pedro Morales against three opponents. Prior to the match, ring announcer Howard Finkel introduced Mean Gene Okerlund, who then presented Tito Santana with his brand new Intercontinental Championship belt. On commentary, Vince McMahon even remarked at the beauty. On the October 11th, 1985 edition of Tuesday Night Titans, Tito Santana was the opening guest that night for Vince McMahon, and he had some new bling with him. Tito carried with him the new Intercontinental title, and it was the subject of much of the interview that day. The belt was already losing some of its color. As you can see, the paint was already disappearing from the globe, but the title was still noticeably more gold than it would be in the months to come. Perhaps a side effect of the belt being cleaned with Brasso, which of course strips the gold plating. The Intercontinental title made its first network television appearance on the third Saturday night's main event which aired on November 2nd, 1985 on NBC stations. Tito Santana defended the title that night against the Macho Man. The match ended in a double countout, so Tito left with the title, but the two would continue feuding for months. On November 7th, 1985, the Red Logo IC made its first pay-per-view appearance at a show we've not seen since then, the Wrestling Classic. There are no good close-ups of the belt from that night because it wasn't defended, but Tito still wore it to the ring to defeat Don Morocco. The belt made its second appearance later in the night, as Tito also wore it to the ring for a match with Paul Orndorff, which ended in a draw. On February 8, 1986, at the Boston Garden, Macho Man Randy Savage won the Intercontinental Championship from Tito, or, in the words of Gorilla Monsoon, literally stole the championship. Tito was getting the better of Savage until the challenger used a piece of cold rolled steel, as Gorilla called it, to knock Tito out and get the cheap victory. Fans didn't care. They loved it anyway. In matches both before and after he won the title, Savage had been challenging Hulk Hogan at the peak of the Hulkamania boom. He felt like a main event level performer, and he was. Savage's legendary run with the title saw him routinely wrestling in the main event throughout 1986. Many times, it would be in title defenses against Tito Santana, George Steele, or the Junkyard Dog. And these matches usually closed the show. WrestleMania II was the first WrestleMania to feature the Red Letter Intercontinental title. George the Animal Steele challenged Randy Savage for the title, but of course, Savage cheated to win that night. But during this time, some of the most memorable appearances of the belt weren't even in wrestling matches. The Macho Man's trademark flair and style saw him showing off the gold during interview segments or on talk show appearances like Tuesday Night Titans. In late 1986, Randy Savage began the most important feud of his career. Savage entered into a blood feud with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat after he crushed his larynx with the ring bell on the November 22, 1986 episode of WWF Superstars. For months, we heard reports from the doctors that Steamboat had nearly lost his career or more. Savage's reign continued as he defended the title for the first time on network television on the 8th edition of Saturday Night's Main Event, which aired on November 29, 1986 on NBC. Savage fought Jake Roberts to a double disqualification in the opening match. Savage successfully defended the title at the next two Saturday Night Main Events, January 3rd and March 14th, against George Steele, who was vying for the attention of Miss Elizabeth. It was during this time that Macho Man was stunned by the return of Steamboat. The Dragon and the Macho Man were on a collision course for WrestleMania 3. Savage appeared multiple times backstage at the big show, March 29th, 1987, in an era where backstage segments were fairly limited. Front and center, the Intercontinental Championship belt, including his segment with Mary Hart and Elizabeth. But it wasn't the backstage antics that went down in history, it was wrestling. The match was unlike anything fans had seen in the WWF. Hogan and Andre may have been the main event, but the match that stole the show was the Intercontinental Championship match. Savage lost, barely, after a back and forth match. His reign lasted a remarkable 414 days, but Steamboat was the new champion at the biggest event in the history of professional wrestling. The match was so universally beloved by both fans and critics alike, it became known as the best intercontinental match in history at that point. Steamboat's high-profile championship win would come to a surprising end just 65 days later. As the legend goes, Ricky Steamboat wanted to come off the road, but of course that meant Vince McMahon would need him to drop the title. And as the legend goes, Butch Reed was supposed to win this title, but when he no-showed that event, Vince was open to suggestion. Hulk Hogan spoke up for his friend, Wayne Ferris. On the June 13th, 1987 episode of WWF Superstars, the Honky Tonk Man shocked the world and defeated Ricky Steamboat for the Intercontinental title. There were no great camera shots of the belt that night. The Honky Tonk Man is the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time, 454 days, and he began his reign with this version of the belt. On the October 3rd edition of Saturday Night's Main Event on NBC, Randy Savage made one more effort to get his championship back. Savage was pretty heavily cheered against the Honky Tonk Man. Savage won the match, but by disqualification. But the match is more memorable for being the spark that led to the Mega Powers. And it was all because Savage wanted his belt back. At the very first Survivor Series on November 26, 1987, this Intercontinental Championship belt was in the first segment, featuring the Honky Tonk Man. He captained a team including Outlaw Ron Bass, Dangerous Danny Davis, and Wayne Ferris's favorite wrestler of all time, Harley Race. They would face Team Macho, and when it came down to Honky versus Jake the Snake and Randy Savage, Honky took his belt, got out of there. On January 5th, 1988, the WWF's television tapings were right up the road from me at the Von Braun Civic Center here in Huntsville, Alabama. For the episode of Superstars of Wrestling that aired on January 30th, Honky Tonk Man won a quick match over an enhancement talent. He entered that night wearing the red logo belt. This taping is significant because this would be the last televised match for this particular championship. The next day, the WWF tapings were in Nashville, Tennessee. For the January 31st episode of Wrestling Challenge taped that night, Randy Savage won a quick match over an enhancement talent. And while not wrestling, Honky Tonk Man would be wearing this championship belt for its last television appearance. And it was all building up to a very important conflict. On the February 8th, 1988 edition of The Main Event, featured Andre the Giant pinning Hulk Hogan for the brand new world title, the Honky Tonk Man was to defend his Intercontinental title against the Macho Man Randy Savage. And on that night, the belt seemed a little shinier. It was. It was a new belt, in fact. The red paint in the logo block was gone. As the rumor goes, Honky Tonk was upset by the way Dick Ebersol handled him leading up to the match, where he was originally scheduled to lose his championship. And as a result of those conversations, he tried to jump ship to the NWA while still Intercontinental Champion. In the end, cooler heads prevailed and Honky stayed with the WWF. But he did not lose the title as was originally planned. Allegedly, to pacify the Macho Man, Savage would wind up winning the world title at WrestleMania 4 in a match that many assumed would have been Ted DiBiase's chance to win the world title and therefore build another opponent for Hulk Hogan when he returned from shooting No Holds Barred. We got a close look at the new belt on February 8th's Primetime Wrestling as Honky bragged about how he was still the champion. The style of this championship would again be seen at that year's WrestleMania and many more as Reggie Park's Intercontinental design would last through 1998. But that's a belt for another day. All told, this championship was on television from September 28th, 1985 to January 30th, 1988. That's 855 days, or 2 years, 4 months, and 3 days on television. Macho Man Randy Savage held this belt for almost half of its television life, 414 days. This, of course, further explains why collectors simply refer to this as the Savage IC. Counting only TV appearances, Honky Tonk Man kept the title for 232 days. Tito Santana held it for 133 days. And of course, Ricky Steamboat, who had the most high-profile win of this belt ever, held the title a mere 65 days. As with so many other ring-use titles, when a belt is replaced on television with a new version, the old one winds up on a shelf somewhere. As the story goes, this title wound up being a keepsake for WWE Senior Vice President and General Counsel Rich Herring. Mr. Herring has been with the company since the 1980s. In 2019, it made the news that the WWE was looking to move out of the famed Titan Towers for a new office that was under construction. The rumor and innuendo is that the new space would showcase some famous artifacts from WWE history, most notably a very special title display. The company was able to recover this particular title from Mr. Herring as a part of those plans back in 2019. Around that same time, I was contacted via Twitter about the possibility of purchasing a pair of Andre the Giant's cowboy boots, and unbelievably, the very first WWF Intercontinental Championship that Pat Patterson debuted back in 1979. I jumped at the chance to make this acquisition and proudly brought the title to StarCast events in Chicago, Las Vegas, and Baltimore for fans around the globe to enjoy back in 2019. Of course, Bruce Pritchard went back to work for the WWE in February of 2019 and quickly rose to power, helping spearhead creative for the company. Of course, Bruce and I had become great friends working together on our Something to Wrestle podcast that started back in 2016. Sadly, Bruce's longtime writing partner and great friend, Pat Patterson, passed away on December 2nd, 2020. In an effort to memorialize Pat and his legacy with the WWE, Bruce called me and asked if the company could borrow my Intercontinental Championship. Of course, I was happy to oblige. While this may seem like a somewhat foreign concept to many, I had loaned WWE memorabilia dating back to 2015. Whenever they would have access and needed an old championship belt, boots, or even Ric Flair's robes, I would happily overnight the items for them to display. While many collectors have called me crazy for doing so, I think that's the fun of owning these collectibles, sharing them. In fact, that's the very purpose of Title Chase. In any event, once the first Intercontinental title arrived in Florida for SmackDown, my phone lit up with messages about how cool it was to see such a big part of WWE history in person. Wrestlers and office personnel alike were shocked to know that not only did the title exist, but they were holding it. Of course, there was a glory shot of the title that night on SmackDown as part of the tribute to Pat, and it was a beautiful moment. As a fan, I couldn't help but appreciate that Sami Zayn was Intercontinental Champion at the time, not only a personal favorite of Pat's, but also a fellow Montreal Canadien to boot. Over the next few weeks, discussions were had about why the WWE didn't own Pat's belt. They famously secured the first WWF world title, known as the Bruno Belt, about 10 years ago, with the help of belt maker Dave Milliken and a private collector. WWE made it clear to me that they wanted this belt. They asked if it was for sale, but of course, I had other ideas. I didn't want money. I wanted something money couldn't buy, the Macho Man's Intercontinental Championship. It took a few weeks of negotiating and convincing, but in the end, a FedEx box arrived and one of the most iconic championships of all time was now here in my home in Huntsville, Alabama. Dave Milliken, who was once Reggie Park's apprentice and now business partner of many years, lives about an hour away from me. Within hours of FedEx making delivery, Milliken was headed my way to see what he considered to be a holy grail belt amongst collectors. Dave believes that behind the big gold belt, this is my most special ring use championship. As we said earlier, amongst collectors, the Reggie Parks Intercontinental Championship is one of the most sought after titles for any collection. But this was the very first one. It was fun to ooh and ah this title with Dave for a bit that night. It was Dave who actually pointed out the tell to me. We both spent time scouring the internet and old magazines for old pictures to memorialize and maybe relive some of our favorite moments of our fandom as kids. These days, you can see it over my left shoulder whenever you see video from one of our podcasts. It's in my home studio, and I'm proud to say it's here to stay. As for what the belt is worth today, that's really anyone's guess. As with all Ring Use Championship, what gives the belts their value are the matches and moments they represent among the superstars who held them. The historical significance of this particular belt is enormous. The title was used during the golden era of the World Wrestling Federation, when Vince McMahon first took the promotion national and made Hulk Hogan a household name. This particular belt has so much significance. This was Tito Santana's last WWF championship. This was the belt the Honky Tonk Man wore when he called himself the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. This was Ricky Steamboat's only WWF Championship. This was Randy Savage's first WWF Championship. And WrestleMania 3. What else needs to be said about that match and its importance? To me, this belt and its rich history is priceless. WrestleMania 3 was regarded as the biggest and perhaps the most important WrestleMania ever until 2001. WrestleMania 17 broke every record in the books. And as we approach the 20-year anniversary of that show, I thought, what could be better than taking a look at the title defended in the main event of that show? The iconic WWF World title, debuted by Stone Cold Steve Austin, that collectors know simply as the Big Eagle. See you next time on Title Chase.